My name is Jamal Alessi, spending an afternoon talking to the armchair champions. Can't wait to get stuck into it with the lads.
Welcome to the Armchair Champions Podcast, your midweek sports fix and barroom banter with your hosts, Captain, Crackers, Sheriff, Unit and Viper.
G'day champions and welcome to another episode of your Midweek Sports Fix. We are the Armchair Champions. Champions, I tell you what, we have got a bloody good guest coming on today for a bit of a chin wag. We've got a legend from the Canterbury Bulldogs 2004 Premiership winning team. Also started off with the Canberra Raiders, went on to play for Tigers and they have a Super League. Jamal Lolesi is coming on for a chat. I'm looking forward to this being the Bulldogs fan.
Me too, I'm looking forward to this one. He used to be in and out of my fantasy teams as well.
Yeah, he's rock solid, always got the tries, and if you look at his strike rate over the period that he did play in the NRL, he was Mr. Reliable. So, mate, really looking forward to this chat. We'll get him on shortly, but thanks to Taylor & Co. Legal. Hey, Sheriff, welcome to the podcast, mate.
Thank you, mate. It's good to be back.
Yes. Welcome back. I'll tell you what, the footy over the weekends, mate. The Knights. Woof.
Mate, I think it's...
What's going on?
Yeah, well, Ponga's out for a little while now, maybe the season.
Yeah.
And I read this morning on one of the Knights fan pages, it's Team List Tuesday, we're recording on a Tuesday, and somebody came on and said, how do we think AOB will rearrange the deck chairs on the Titanic? That's pretty much it. It's not all doom and gloom. We're not completely sunk without Pong, but it's a very different team without him there. I'm not looking forward to the rest of this.
And when you saw him run out, he was limping running out. So he obviously got needled or something and it didn't work.
He had a hip pointer injury the week before.
Yeah.
And so he was carrying that. And then I think something's happened in the middle of his foot during the game. And he wouldn't come back from it, so.
Yeah, he got a bit footloose, eh?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit later in the NRL chat, but also thanks to Bottoms Up New South Wales. Let's get into the Jordan, Derek, Half and Goose Awards for the week. What do you got, champion?
I got two Jordans, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
So I went to the Swifts game with the Swifties. Kids on Sunday, and it was good to see the Swifts get a win. They pumped the Mavericks, who are the new team. So the Mavs came in.
Sorry, Taylor Fraser, friend of the show, but
love Tay-Tay. I messaged her yesterday, and she's liking it down there. But
yeah, beautiful kid.
It's a bit of a tough start to the season, but they're the new team that replaced the Magpies. The Swifties getting back on the. On the ladder and really pumping the Mavs. They played so well.
Yep.
Sam Wallace was phenomenal at GS.
Yep.
Did not miss a beat. And so she's taken...
Good to see her back on the court too.
Yeah, well, she had a year off last year with injury. And, yeah. Romelda was our goal shooter last year. But the team just looks so much more confident and relaxed with Sam up front. And I think that... speaks volumes for what they're going to do this year because they went so close last year. So
nice one. And friends of the show too, Matty Proud and Paige Hadley, ripper game too.
Absolutely. And if you're listening, Swifts, I'll talk about this in my my Derek of the week in a minute.
This is a good one.
And then my other Jordan, Jesse Bromwich.
Oh yes,
he was the first prop in history to play his 300th NRL game.
That position too.
That's what I mean. The 300 club is pretty illustrious to begin with because it's such a tough game.
Bloody oath!
You know, you've had a career if you've played 300 games, but 300 games at prop, like that's. That's just something else.
Yeah.
And for me, that probably puts him, I mean, in terms of how you would rank careers, that is an Ironman career for me. That puts him a little bit above everybody else that's made the 300 club.
Yep.
In terms of toughness anyway. So,
well done,
Jesse Bromwich.
Yeah, no, that's a nice one for sure.
What about you, Captain?
Well, look, I think you've got to give Zach Lomax a bit of a call out. What he did against the Warriors, sorry, Mitchie Barnett, but he was on fire.
Mm.
You know, he scored, tries, kicked his goals.
Yep.
And this is a kid who's already signed with the Parramatta Eels for 4 years.
He's been chopped around a little bit, so yeah. I wonder if there are some issues there at St George, but yeah, he didn't seem to show it on the weekend, did he?
No, and he's been rock solid ever since too. Like, everyone gets it, okay, you're playing for a contract, you've got to be on your best. But now that the contract's pretty much done,
yep.
And what the performance he put on the weekend, holy shit, like this kid, he's like, okay, well, I'm not just going to dog the team. I'm not going to dog the boys. Yeah, as you said, whatever's happening there with the coach or whatever he's butting heads with, who knows? We don't know.
Yep.
But that game that he provided against the Warriors, that was top notch.
Absolutely.
Absolutely top notch. Mm. Also going to give a shout out to another friend of the show, Kira Austin, for down here for the Vixens.
The Vixens, yep.
Great start to the season. She's been bloody rock solid and shooting the house down too.
Yep.
So shout out to you. And I'm also going to give the Sydney Swans a bit of a shout out for absolutely pumping the Suns. Go you, Swannies. Everyone loves a Swanny. All right. Now, thanks to Stan and Taylor Real Estate and Christy Mivay Photography, let's get into the half, the goose, the Derek. What moment do you think they would like to have again, Sheriff? Let's kick it off.
Unfortunately, it's me this week. Yeah. I am the biggest Derek that I know this week.
Oh, I love this one.
So Sunday on a whim, we're Swifts members, but we don't go to every game. And we found ourselves at home on Sunday with a spare afternoon.
Yep.
So the kids and I grabbed some tickets and headed on in to watch the Swifts. And I got to tell you, if you've never been to a netball game, a Suncorp Super netball game, go down with the family, because the pre-game entertainment and things around the ground, I suppose, it's at Ken Rosewall Arena if you're in Sydney. The pre-game stuff that they do, very wholesome, very family-oriented. They got the merch stand. They got the food trucks. They've got hair braiding. That's no good to me, but they've got face painting. They've got like – physical activities.
Maybe they've got to paint in some hair on you.
Maybe. But one of the things that they do, they've got the vertical jump test.
Yes.
And the kids all lined up and did it and then egged Dad on, and Dad had already had a beer and thought, yep, let's do this, because I do it at training anyway. Yep. And I'm no slouch. And so I've lined up for the vertical jump, and as I've jumped with all the weight of my legs pushing up and reaching with my arm, I've caught a plastic clip halfway up the pole and tore the back of my hand open.
Yowch.
And I still reached up and whacked the bottom peg, but blood spurted everywhere and all over my favourite white hoodie and down my pants and all over the place. And I don't know if anyone switched on quick enough to catch what had happened.
You'd hope not.
Well, I was a bit embarrassed.
The kids would be like, tomato sauce or the chips.
My ego was a little bit hurt, so I shoved the hand straight in the pocket and went again and did the jump left-handed. And I whacked peg 75 or something, and the lady running it said, oh, that's not too bad. And I thought, yeah, bloody right, it's not too bad. And that was about when I felt the blood running down my pants leg and thought, I'm in trouble here. So I ended up – it was very lucky. I ran to the bathroom and washed it off and got some paper towel, and it was flapping open and disgusting. But I ended up having the sports tape in the bag, so I just taped that mofo up and
went again.
Yeah, we went and watched
the game. We ran it back.
We went and watched the game because my mama didn't raise no pussy.
That's it.
But the kids were a bit put off with all the blood. But
I can imagine.
Ended up getting 3 stitches at hospital later on. So if you're listening, Swifts, there is one way you could make this up to me. Helen needs to come on the podcast, please.
Yes, come on.
Helen Housby, get her on.
Let's make it happen.
We'd love a chat. She's a champion, and she had a great game on Sunday.
She did, she had a very good game.
But anyway, the Derek for me this week is me.
Well, there you go.
Have you got a Derek there, Captain?
Well, look, there's a couple that you could probably point a finger at in the NRL. It was a tipper's nightmare for a start.
Oh, that was a horrible week.
I think I might have got 3 or 4. I don't know, but the AFL was the same.
Yep.
There were so many upsets in the AFL, it was hard to pick a broken nose. But I'll tell you what, I've got to throw it at the Titans' defense. I was at this game live against Manly Seagulls, and I had a pretty red-hot multi, which I ended up getting up, so I was sort of a Jordan there. Mm-hmm. Won $380. Sweet.
I like how you slid that in there.
Yeah, got to give yourself a pat. But I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm thinking, okay, so they've kicked the ball down, Manly have kicked it, and the Titans have got the ball, they're running back into the Seagulls defense. Mm-hmm. And okay, no worries, that's all play on. It took the front row of Boppers three tackles to get back onside.
Mm.
And you don't realise until you're actually at the game and they're just walking. There's no urgency. There's no anything. Fuck, let's get back onside. Let's help the boys out. Let's take a run-up.
Right.
That's why the wingers and all that are doing these run-ups, because these other buggers are fucking walking back.
Yep.
And all the boos were happening and all that sort of stuff, and it was from the Titan supporters because it kept happening. And they wanted a lot. It was a close game in the end, but Titans could have really won that. And it comes down to effort, it comes down to dedication, and it comes down to these guys really wanting to fucking win. And it just showed that they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, screw you guys. So, like,
is that a – do you think – would you put that down to coaching? You know, like, have you really got to give those boys a rev up and be talking about those 1% things that you do off the ball? Like,
I think Desi will – he'll look at that during the week.
Mm.
And he'll probably go put the aircon on at minus four in the next TV video session and say, look at this shit. That's not good enough.
No.
You pricks, get back on side. Help your team out. If you're tired, fucking get off.
Yep.
But it was a pretty bad look. And I'll tell you what, the other bad look was them saying it was 13,000 or something there. Like Dad said, it looked like about five.
Was it hot?
No.
Yeah,
no, it had been raining a little bit. It wasn't too muggy or humid. It was just a normal sort of day up there. And there was more Manly fans there, I reckon, than Titans. So they got an issue up there at the Gold Coast getting attracted – or attracting players
But that's always been the case. It's not necessarily players will go there for the lifestyle.
Sorry, fans,
right?
Sorry, not players.
But fans.
Yeah, fans won't turn up.
And is that because the teams never quite gel and aren't that competitive? You know, because you know, people will pay hard earned to go and watch a good team perform.
Yep.
You know, is that a. Do you think it's a performance-based thing or is it, you know, socioeconomic?
Maybe where the stadium is too. It's
not that many families. It's a bit out of the way.
Rabina
sucks to get to. Like if you're staying on the Gold Coast or live near the beach, it's a shitter to get to.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that's probably adding a lot to it. But on the same day, we turn up to the Sporting Globe right opposite the stadium. Oh, it's probably 800-900 metres away. Wouldn't be more than a K. Manly had their Golden Eagles going on. They had a big function, Old Boys Day.
Okay.
And so did the Titans. Unfortunately, there was only about maybe five or six Old Boy Titans there, whereas Manly was absolutely packed. They boosted this whole place. It was huge. It was packed out with Manly supporters.
I wonder why, because
– I don't know. But I didn't recognise any of these Old Boys on the Titans either.
Even if you've moved away from the Gold Coast as a Titans Old Boy because you didn't want to retire there, like – the Manly Old Boys make their way up there. It's a holiday destination, right?
Yeah, yep.
Strange.
Saw the old winger Williams. He was there. Bryant.
David,
was there.
The Wolfman.
Yeah, it was all happening.
Love the Wolfman.
You know, Ken Arfison was there.
Yeah, right.
You know, there was a lot of old players there, and we're just like, fuck, now this is a good environment. But it's up in Gold Coast. You'd expect that down in Manly.
Yeah.
Anyway, lift your game, Titans. It was pretty ordinary anyway. All right, champions, now at the start of the podcast, I said we've got a pretty special guest on here. It may have been a Bulldogs fan. I'll tell you what, I'm frothing at the choppies over this one. We've got a former Bulldog, Raider and Tigers player. We'll send a little stint over there in the Super League. So thanks to Hippo Constructions, let's get him on for a bit of a chat. Welcome to the Armchair Champion, Jamal Alessi.
G'day, Jamal.
Thanks for having me on, boys. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, not a problem at all, mate. You made your debut against the Sharkies. You remember much about that day? It was a bit of a blur.
Yeah, I do. Actually, I do. I remember that the first game quite fondly, actually. I got really good memories of it. I was like, I think I was named about 18th or 19th man, and I was really good friends with Leslie Vinicolo.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he was in doubt that week. And he was on the physio bed before training, and I remember walking past him. He says to me, "Oh, do you want to play this week?" And I was like, "Yeah, I do, actually."
Yeah,
and
he's like,
"Well, I'm about 50-50. He goes, "If you want to play, I'll just pull out and you can have a game."
Well, the old volcano. How good's that?
The volcano. So So I managed to get a start. We travelled to Sydney. We stayed overnight in Cronulla there, and I was rooming with Brett Mullins.
Oh, yeah. We've had Mullo on. He's a good fun.
Yeah. He's such a good bloke. But I was just so starstruck. We didn't win the game, but I remember it clearly. Laurie Daly says to me, "Mate, are you nervous?" I said, "Mate, I'm shitting myself." He says, "Right, come in off the kickoff," because we were kicking off. He says, "Mate, make the first tackle. Once you're involved in the game, you'll get rid of all your nerves."
Oh, right.
I said, no drama. So I came in, I stood about, I think I was about 4 or 5 men in, because I got picked on the wing. So he put me in the middle there. It kicked off to a bloke called Nathan Long. Long blonde head.
Yeah,
front
rower. Remember Nathan Long,
He used to come off the back fence. He used to come charging back. Anyway, he's come flying back off this kickoff, and I've tried to line him up to tackle him, and I haven't got it right, and he's went straight through.
Oh.
Made a 60-metre break.
Well,
I remember Laurie running next to me just yelling out, "Mate, get back on your wing immediately."
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and that was good memories. They were a really good bunch of blokes. There was so much experience in that Raiders side that I made my debut with. I was just so fortunate I got to play with Laurie Daly, you know, Brett Mullins, Ken Nagus, David Ferner.
Good
team. It was just such a good squad. Yeah, we ended up going. Yeah, we went, I think, I think I come through about midway through the season. Now the last 13 games I played 11. Yeah. And we got knocked out of the Roosters in the major semi.
Everyone hates the Roosters. One of the other panelists that is normally on, he's a massive Rooster fan of Viper, but he's a cock of a bloke too, we always call him. So anyway. mate, I'll tell you what, down in Canberra, you did all right. Like you played a few seasons down there. You 68 games for 32 tries. So that's not a bad average, mate. That's a pretty good strike rate.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my time down at Canberra. It was probably the perfect place for a young lad to go, because I remember when I was playing up here at Keebra Park on the Gold Coast, and I got offers to go to the Roosters, to North Queensland, to Canterbury Bulldogs, and then to Canberra. And I went down with my parents, and the Bulldogs was the best tour. Like, they were the best club. They had the best facilities. There was a really good group there.
Yep.
But my parents just didn't want me to move to Sydney, just coming straight out of school. When we went to Canberra, there was a really good family feel about it. And they put you up in this boarding house. And in the boarding house, there was me, Alan Tung, Mark Bryant. There was Brent Kite. There was some really good players to come out of that boarding house. We all kind of went through and sort of made grades. So my parents got a good feel about it and thought, you go to Canberra because it's a quieter town, and it ended up being a really good decision. And then it was just unfortunate. We had Mal the first year. Mal got sacked, and then Matt Elliott took over.
Oh, right.
Yeah, and then it was just a bit of a funny time in that period, and then the opportunity came up to move to the Bulldogs.
I would have got the fuck out of there straight away. There'd be too much meditating and fucking all that shit there with him.
100%.
He's a quick
and at the time the Doggies had a really good squad. They'd just come out of the salary cap scandal, and it was just the perfect time to move. I'd played a couple of years and ended up being a really good move.
I was going to ask about that salary cap thing, because right when you went in there, right knee deep, just about there. Was there any sort of, shouldn't be going there after what's just happened sort of thing, cheating bastards or whatever, or are you going to be looked down on for playing for them, or you just thought, no, bloody good opportunity, like you're saying?
Well, I think anyone who was involved in the game back then knew that everybody was cheating. It was just
cheating. They just got caught, yeah.
Yeah, so everybody was doing a little bit here and there. Look, I'll be honest with you, I reckon it's still a little bit goes on here and there this day and age. But, you know, the only thing that went down at the Doggies, which was disappointing for them at that period, because in 2003 they were winning the comp, they were going to win, they just had the best team. One of the board members got sour at getting kicked off the board and decided to disclose all the books, all the salaries.
You bastard.
Yeah, and so they had to cut a lot of players and then sort their salary cap out, and it just so worked out that poor old Nigel Vungana, he was such a good player, but he was on a fortune, and they just had to move a little bit around. Yeah, and so they took a bit of a swing with me and Willie Tonga.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, me and Willie Tonga came in at the same time, and then they backed a bit of youth. They had Rennie Matua coming through and Sonny Bill Williams.
Yep.
And Roy Asatazi to go with the Ford pack that they already had.
Yeah, Percy, bloody Bobcat Ryan.
Mark O'Mealy, Willie Mason.
Yeah, Mealy,
Corey Hughes, Tony Grimaldi. It was just such a stacked team, and then the juniors coming through. I think Braith was only 18 at the time, or 19.
Yeah. Wow.
It was just a really young squad, and then you had Shifty Shirt was young. Jonathan Thurston was still there playing reserve grade, would you believe it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, to get to mix the youth with the older boys, it just was a sort of the perfect mix.
Yeah, Dad, the General at the back there too. So I think old Luke General, he was still running the show back there as well.
Yeah, General was at the back. Your Matty Utai was on the wing.
Oh, fuck, he had some legs on him.
Hazem Al-Mazri was on the other wing.
Yep.
Just a really good squad it was, even though they'd gone through the troubles of having let five or six really top-class players go. They managed to recruit really well. It was Glenn Hughes. One of the Hughes boys, the Hughes family, synonymous with the Bulldogs. He recruited really well. He brought in some younger guys. He took a swing at Willie Tonga, who Parramatta thought wasn't really producing for them. And then they took me from Canberra. They saw something in me at Canberra, gave me a shot up there. And then they had obviously Roy Asatazi, Jonathan Thurston, Sonny Bill Williams coming through. They thought we'd just back a bit of youth with the experience that we've got. It just was, like I said before, it was just a perfect mixture at that time.
Bloody hell.
So what was the comparatively between, say, Canberra and Canterbury? Because Canterbury's traditionally known as a family club, and you've already thrown some of those famous names, like family names associated with the club out there. But you said it was a bit of a family environment down in Canberra. What was the difference, like the main differences between the two clubs?
In terms of they're both really good, big family-orientated clubs. I would say that about both of them. That was one positive to both clubs. I think just in terms of the squad at that time, they had a really good mix of young guys with the experience. Mm. And then you added in, you know, the X factor of Sonny Bill Williams, Willie Mason, you know, Brent Sherwin, Braith Anasta, Willie Tonga playing that year. It just happened to be like a perfect mix of youth with experience. And then the way that they trained, I found that was probably the biggest difference. I thought we trained hard at Canberra until I got to the Bulldogs and nearly died on the first day. just that real toughness that they brought to the way they trained. We trained hard, like ridiculously hard, probably two or three times harder than I trained at Canberra.
Mm.
And I would say that the other big difference was they trained hard and they still had that that culture of train hard, drink hard.
They still had that.
That was an old school thing that's kind of gone out of the game a bit now, but they still had that.
Blokes pumping durries at half time and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think Olga was still puffing on the durries.
Mark O'Neilly was.
He's a beast.
What about the difference between the two grounds? You know, like Canberra's a bit of a fortress and it's fucking cold. And then, you know, these days they got the Viking clap, but we probably didn't have that back then. And then say Belmore, like what was it like playing between the two venues?
We actually never got to play at Belmore because that was only more recent. Canberra was a fortress. Even though we didn't have the Viking Club, it was a very hard place to come and win for an away team.
Yeah,
it just had that mantra down there. But at the Doggies, we didn't really have a home. We had a Stadium Australia at the time. It's obviously Acorn now.
Yeah.
And then we caught that one. You know, I would say the main difference between the two clubs in terms of support was that the Bulldogs supporters were just 10 times more hectic.
Yeah, right.
And especially back then, there was that real Roosters were really good. So there was that real Roosters Bulldogs rivalry that kind of carried on for like two or three years.
Yeah.
And those clashes were I'd never seen anything like those. It was like going to watch Manchester United versus Manchester City. It was like they really disliked each other, the fans and the crowd. And they came for the games where we were playing East. They came out in their droves for those ones. Those were the ones that really got you up for it.
Well, they should be thanking us, really, because in 2002 we handed them a premiership. So, they should be at least a bit more friendlier to us. But some of those names that you rattled off early on, Sonny Bill, what was it like seeing a young Sonny Bill running up the paddock? Well, I mean, we all saw the clash between him and Joel Klein and we thought, holy fuck, this bloke's got it. What was he like at training? Was he you see him after now with boxing and all that sort of stuff, and he seems a pretty mellow sort of cat. But what was he like back there in the day on the training paddock?
He was actually unbelievable. I'd actually never seen anyone like him. I'd seen young guys come through the grade, and you're like, you think, oh, this kid's tough. You know, he's really athletic, but he was different. He turned up to training for his first ever preseason with the top squad, and won everything. He won all the fitness. He won all the speed. He won all the strength work. We used to do these crazy bike rides for like between 60 and 80 kilometres. We'd like ride from Cronulla into the national park up the hill.
Shit.
You'd leave at like 6 in the morning. You'd get back at like 2 in the other. And Stoney Bill had never ridden a road bike, a proper road bike with the gears, and the tyres are really thin and your feet clip in.
Yeah.
You know, you see the guys on Sunday and they're all out just having a ride on their bikes. They're all clipped in. It's like we've got all the gear on.
All the special shoes.
He'd never ridden one of those bikes before. He just rolled up, clipped himself in, didn't know how to work the gears properly. And so he sets off on this bike ride, and we used to go in three groups, like a pretty shit group at riding, and then the medium group, and then the gun group. And so Sonny had been winning all the fitness, so they just threw him in with all the guns.
Yeah.
I was in the really shit group. So we got to set off 10, 20 minutes before him. We went in 10-minute intervals.
Yeah,
so we went first, and then 10 minutes later the middle group, and then 10 minutes later the elite group went. So I've got a 20-minute head start. I'm off. And I remember me and Matt Utah are riding through. We're in Cronulla. We're probably about 4 or 5 hours into it. We're going up this hill that just like, it looked like it never stopped. It was just so long, this big hill. It just kept going. It probably took you like 5 or 6 minutes to ride up it.
Bloody hell.
I had it in the easiest gear, and I was like zigzagging up the hill to make it easier for myself, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I was like going across the, you know, across the road to like, so I wasn't going directly up.
Yeah.
I hear this like noise coming from behind me. It's like an electric bike. It's like going zzz, zzz, zzz. And Sonny Bill was coming up behind me, right? In like one of the hardest gears, in the big cog. He didn't know how to change it into the easy gear. He just rode up the hill in the hard gear out of the saddle. But it was like a motorbike going past me. I remember Matty Utah looking over at me, goes, "Bro, it's not fair. It's not fair. Look at the size of my legs and look at the size of his legs."
You should have veered at him, see what he had done then.
Yeah, he was just a supreme athlete, but he was like mentally tough. He just had everything you wanted for a young kid coming into a you know, a first team environment. But you know, that squad was just blessed with really tough people and really hard competitors. I remember like back then Braith actually got, I don't know if you remember this, Braith got rated the most overrated player.
Yeah, that's right. A few years in a row.
He was only like 19 or 20. And I remember him coming into training, and I remember like I'd never met him. First time I met him, when he was a really good bloke, and then we trained him. The one thing that stuck with me was like how good a competitor he was. He would want to win every fitness drill.
Mm.
If there was a loose ball on the ground, he'd want to dive and win it. Like he was just the ultimate competitor. Mm. He didn't get enough credit for that. He was 18 or 19, and everybody was saying he was going to be the next Freddie Fittler. But he wasn't saying that. Everybody else was saying that.
Yeah, that's right.
And so when he didn't live up to those expectations, or like people expected him to play at a certain level, everyone would say, "Oh, he's overrated, this kid.
Yeah.
He'd be the next Freddie Fittler." Well, that wasn't him saying that. That was everybody else in the media saying that.
It's a bit of a shit go, isn't it?
Yeah, he was just a consummate professional, turning up to train early, looking after himself. He trained super, super hard. And like they were all like that. And that's what took me by surprise when I got to the Doggies. Like Jonathan Thurston was like one of the fittest in the team.
Mm.
Luke Patton would just run all day, just outrun the beep test. It would stop. There was no more beeps. Like they were just super like athletes, unbelievable. And I remember at Christmas, I think at Canberra, we had to get like a certain level on the beep test. It might have been like 12 or 13. I mean, these blokes, you get Thurston and Luke Patton, they were up to like the 15s. They were like running this thing out. There was no more beeps. Hell. And I remember just the level of athlete that I went to from Canberra to the Bulldogs, it was completely different. It was like they were just all supreme athletes, but just all mentally tough. And I remember the thing that stuck out to me, folks, he said we were going to be the best chick chase team that's ever been made in the NRL's history. We're going to kick it into corners and we're going to chase so hard. We're going to win every of the first three tackles and every set that people are going to fear when we kick the ball. They're not going to want to carry the ball back out against us. And that's where that Dogs of War.
Dogs of War, yeah. I've got that book too. It's a pretty good book. Mm. And Folksy too, he was an absolute bloody machine himself. He was fit.
Oh, he's the fittest coach I've ever seen. He would do all the bike rides and all the running with us, and he would often beat us easily.
Don't see Wayne Bennett doing that.
So I think Bellamy's quite fit.
Yeah, Bellamy goes all right. Bellamy, yeah.
We'll come back to some of the players that you played with and against in a minute because we love hearing about that. But have you got a favourite try or a favourite memory from your playing time that you know that sticks out for you?
I think we played the Roosters. I mean, all the good memories I have are against the really big teams. But I remember one night in particular, we played the Roosters. We played them in round three. They flogged us. Mm. I think they put 40 on us in 2004.
Yeah.
They put a big score on us one night. They were, like, unbelievable. Like, every time they had an edge shot, they just cut us through us like butter. Like, it was – I remember walking off the field that night thinking, oh, we'll play them in one of the big games at the back end of the year. It ended up being the grand final.
Grand final, yeah.
We played him in a mid-round game after that. The second time we played him during the season, we played him out at Stadium Australia. And it was a really tight game. But I remember at halftime, Fugsy saying to us, like, he was really good, Fugsy, at letting us play our own game. I remember Fugsy coming up in particular to me and Willy Tonga. We were playing on the left edge, and he just kept saying, just you boys just keep playing footy.
Mm-hmm.
Just keep playing footy. They won't like it if you guys just keep playing footy.
And keep chipping away.
I remember, but he wanted us to keep being free, just playing with a little bit of expression, a little bit freedom. Don't be tied down to just wait for the edge shots, actually get it and move it and just play what you see.
Mm.
So I remember that we had a really good defensive set. We, pinned them down in their 20. And I knew when they kicked it, we'd have really good field position. So just on the fourth tackle, I started heading back for the kick. And I remember I yelled out to Willy Tonga and told him, get back and we'll attack straight away because we had a really good defensive set. And I thought, the forwards have given us a good platform. Let's go after him here straight away. So they kicked the ball down. Luke Patton gets tackled in the middle of the field, and I call for the ball. So Shifty Sherwin gets out and just throws a 30-metre cutout pass to me, and I get it right out the channel. And I go and attack, and I remember beat Brett Finch. I pass it to Willy Tonga. He beats two, sprints down the sideline, and on play one of the set, we run 60 metres, and I put it down under the sticks.
Oh, no, beautiful.
And then Willy Tonga just killed Justin Hodges that night, and Justin Hodges gets sent off, and we put 40 or 50 on them. And that's probably good the one that sticks out. Mm. Yeah, it sticks out to me for two reasons, because it was against probably the best team in the comp.
Mm.
And two, because Fugsy really let us play footy. Like, you know, he probably had every right to say, guys, on play one, don't be throwing 30-metre cutouts.
Yeah. Sherwin
and
well
taking them on
for
down the sideline. Yeah, he could easily just say.
And he hit the target.
Yeah, he could just say, come in and just take a carry and get a quick play the ball. Because that's percentages would tell you, just don't make errors. Just keep, playing the percentages, the safe stuff. But he really encourages us to just play what we saw. If we thought there was an opportunity, go and go after it.
Yeah, yeah.
And made a couple of chances to rep New Zealand there as well. Like, what was that like?
That'd be a highlight for sure, playing big country.
Oh, it was really good. We had a really good team as well. We got flogged by Australia, who had an unbelievable team.
Yeah.
But just I think the experience of playing with those boys and then going, I went on tour to England. Unfortunately, I got injured on the first week on a 6-week tour, which was really, it ended up being a great, Daniel Anderson, to his credit, he's gone through some tough times lately, Daniel. So,
yeah, yeah. Mm.
He said, I think it was me and I think Ruben Wiki broke his cheekbone on like week two or three.
Ouch.
And he sat us down and said, look, you want to go home, boys, or you can stay. I'm happy to have you stay. You just can do whatever you want. Mm. Just on the day of the games, just don't be annoying the boys.
Yeah, yeah.
So he let us stay on tour and we just, for 6 weeks, we just had a holiday basically.
And party.
Yeah, it was actually a really good trip. It actually made me want to move there, and that's why I moved there a few years after that tour.
And we'll talk to us about that. I want to hear about the Super League because we don't often get to talk to many players that have had a big career over there.
Yeah, well, I actually, believe it or not, I went over to the Super League for 1 year. I signed a 1-year deal from the Tigers on the proviso that I would come back and sign for the Titans the next year because they were coming in two years' time.
Oh, right. Okay.
I wanted to come home and play at the Gold Coast.
Yep.
But as it works out, things just didn't quite eventuate at the Gold Coast, and I really loved my time over there and ended up signing a 3-year deal halfway through my first year.
You played 95 games for them. It was a bloody good effort. 33 tries.
Yeah.
Yeah, you went
I loved it. Yeah, I loved it. I met my wife there. It's a really good culture. The pub culture was brilliant. They don't go to the pub to get pissed every day. They just go and you meet all your village down there every night, have a meal and go home.
That's your social scene, so
yeah,
to speak.
It's a social scene, yeah. I really enjoyed my time over there. You know, and obviously I stayed there for a bit longer after, and I coached over there with Nathan Brown and with Justin Holbrook.
Well, I was about to ask that about your coaching, yeah. What made you want to do that? And also, do you have aspirations still to continue with coaching?
No, look, I didn't really want to be a coach. I just fell into it. I got injured and I had a surgery, and the surgeon said, look, the rehab's going to take you like 8 months to come back from. I was 29 years old and I thought to myself, I've got a year of rehab to do and then I've got to come back at 30. There's some really good young kids coming through. Mm. Do I want to put my body through that and then chance it? I might not even play if I came back.
Yeah.
Nathan Brown was super. I was really close with him at the time, and he just basically said, mate, we're going to look for an assistant coach in Australia, but if you're going to retire, we're happy to have you take that over that position.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, so I took over the position, like, not really looking for it, and then it ended up being the closest to being around the boys, being at training every day, just not playing. So I ended up just loving it because I was still around the group. I still got to interact with all the boys. And then you kind of get hooked on coaching. It's kind of like a drug. Once you have it, you keep wanting to do it and you want to win and you want to improve every year. So I ended up doing it for a long period of time. But to answer your question, do I have aspirations to keep doing it? At the time when I got out of coaching, which was in 2019, 2020, when Justin Holbrook was at St. Helens, I wanted to spend more time with my young family. And once I had my weekends back and I was able to go to the footy and just watch it as a fan and enjoy it, I couldn't give them back up.
Yeah. I understand that. So as a fan, who are you a fan of? Because you've played for a few Aussie clubs. Were you a fan of any of them growing up or?
Well, yeah. I mean, I did support. I loved the Doggies.
Yep.
I remember when I did a tour with the Doggies to see if I'd sign with them. They were playing in a semi-final, and I really loved them, and I wanted to sign there, but against my parents didn't want me to go there. So I do still support the Doggies. It's been rough going the last few years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, got a few grey hairs. Yeah, I have.
Yeah. Yeah, I really got a soft spot for the Melbourne Storm. I spent a few weeks with them when I was coaching just to see how they operated and how they did things, and they're just such a good organisation from the front office to the physio room to the coaching staff to the players. They all, like, act a certain way. They're all really accommodating. They're all very humble, very respectful. And I guess that's they branch off Bellamy's personality. He's a very respectful man and he likes to do things properly. And they all have that personality trait about them. It sort of filters down through their squad.
Mm.
And I've got a good mate who's playing down there. He's just in the development team. Tristan Powell's down there from he was playing up here at Burleigh Bears. And he just says it's just a fantastic environment to play and train in and to get better at. And so I actually really love I just like the way that they do things.
Yeah.
And that makes it hard to not want to support them.
For sure. Very professional looking club from the outside. So Jamal, back to who you played against and who you played with, put your thinking cap on, because we've got a few questions that we love to ask our guests along the way.
Yep.
Who's the biggest pest that you played with or against, I guess, but someone in the change rooms that always, you know, had a bit of a practical joke or was a bit of a niggle with the boys?
Look, Matty Utai was the best and worst teammate. He was the best. He was the best teammate. He was funny. He was, like, the best personality. But, mate, he stole that many pairs of songs off me. He was like a kleptomaniac for thongs.
Really?
Thongs.
Oh, mate. He would, like, I had to start writing my name on the bottom of the thongs. I got these brand new Havaianas white ones, right? Yeah. I write my name on the bottom because I lost, like, someone's nicked me shoes, me thongs.
Yep.
So I write my name on the bottom. And I said, if someone won't know I've written them, they'll just slide them on and try and walk off it. So sure enough, a couple of weeks into it, Matty Utah's walking around these white thongs and wearing my thongs, they're missing. I said, Matty, they're my thongs, I guarantee you. He goes, no way, bro, I've just bought these. I said, lift them up, look on the bottom. Sure enough, there's my name on the bottom. Oh, these are your ones. I just bought the same pair. Where are they?
Oh, look at them. No.
Mate, honestly, got about five pairs off me.
Oh, he's trying to do the smother too.
Mate, I would have left a little tube of tenactin or something just laying around for him to see. He would have left them alone then.
Okay, so
biggest pest. Who was the hardest to get hit by, or the hardest that you had to tackle?
Oh, mate, the player that I hated playing against the most, and he was a great bloke, was Gordy Tallis.
Oh, yeah, tough man.
Oh, he everything, like he had like the boniest elbows. He ran like super hard every time he ran it, and he would just chirp you all day.
Ooh.
He'd just be talking to you from across the defensive line the whole day. And he was like a player who could back it up. So if you spoke back to Gordy, you had to make sure you could back it up. And I wasn't confident I could.
Yeah, Ben Ross had a go.
Ben Ross
it didn't work.
Not too good for him.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of chirping, did you ever cop a chirp or give a chirp that you were pretty proud of?
Yeah, who was the best sledger?
The best sledger I've ever played with was Willie Mason, hands down, easiest.
Yeah, what a pest.
It's not even close. He could chirp. He's still chirping now to this day, not even playing footy.
That's right.
I've heard that too, yeah.
He was. No one gets close to him. I mean, him and Finchie, when Finchie was at the Roosters, used to chirp. Yeah. It was just a chirp off. Him and Finchie just be going at it the whole game, nonstop, just talking to each other, just chirping each other.
What was the hardest crowd to play in front of?
The hardest crowd was definitely Suncorp.
Yeah, the Bronx go hard, yeah.
Yeah, the Bronx, they show up with their new numbers and they're loud. It's, definitely the Bronx.
You played in such a golden era. Who was the best player that you had to play against? Or with, I suppose.
Look, Sonny Bill was the most talented player I've ever played with. That is 100% hands down. There's no debate about it.
Yep.
But probably the best, the most effective player, the player that had the most impact on the games that I ever played with was Willie Mason.
Really? Okay.
Shit.
Yeah, he doesn't get enough. Look, he was a character and he rubbed people the wrong way. He was like, he talked the most. But if you go back and have a look at him through the era that we kept winning, and he won the Clive Churchill in that grand final. He had the fastest play of the ball. He was the most athletic.
Yeah,
he scored important tries whenever he manned up man for man. He was just the most influential player throughout that 3 or 4 year period where we just dominated. He was the player that was leading it for everyone at training. Off the field, he was the one leading the parties as well. He was the one leading the off-field shenanigans, but he was the first one to turn up at training, train hard, put his head down, make sure we're all going in the same direction as well.
Man, I love that answer. That was not what I expected because there was like that was a huge era of football and so many big names, and we've already rattled off a ton of them. But, Willie Mason, good answer.
Yeah, that's fully surprising. That's good. Hey, one other thing too, did you ever get a grand final ring? Because unfortunately you got injured for that game, but a bit like Steve Price, did you end up getting one?
I did get one, mate, yeah.
Awesome.
I think they did 20. I think that, well, there was only two players that had played every game up until round 22, and that was me and Pricey.
Yeah, right. Nice.
And three players, and Luke Patton.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you had to play like 15 games to get a ring. Well, I pretty much got one the next day or the next week, sorry.
Oh, well, that's good then.
Yeah.
Have you still got it?
I think they made 20-something, 24, 25.
Yeah.
Something like that. Maybe a bit more. Maybe it was like 27 because I think the coach has got some.
Yeah.
Have you still got it? Is that something that you'll pass down the line?
Yeah, mate, I've still got that. Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't sell that. No.
Yeah, I wear it every grand final day when we go to a do or something. If I'm having a barbecue, I'll chuck it on for grand final day.
Oh, absolutely you would.
Yeah.
So Jamal Alessi, tell us about, you mentioned earlier a young family. Tell us about the youngsters.
Yeah, so I've got three boys.
Yep.
Two are older now and at uni.
Nice.
One's Jamin studying. Yeah, he's just done his finished his medical science degree for 4 years, and he's just going into
impressive man.
Yeah, yeah. Heading to infectious disease. Yeah, obviously he's got a lot of his intellect from me.
Yeah.
yeah. And the middle one, Shalem, he's in his third year of architecture.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and my youngest, who's 12, he plays soccer. He's a really good soccer player.
Oh, terrific.
And
well done.
And yeah. Now's how to give the old man the middle finger by the looks of it.
yes, 100%.
What a character. I love that. Hey, yeah. One last thing before you go. You've had a decorated career. Was there one player that you missed out on playing with that you thought, shit, I would love to have a game with that bloke?
Well, that's a good question. I look at it now. If I could answer from today's era.
Yep. Yeah, any era.
Any era, yeah.
Yeah, any era. I look at it now and I think to myself, like, I would love to have just been either played against or in the same team as Nathan Cleary.
Because Prince of Penrith. Good mate of a show.
Yeah, just because of, like, how much impact he has on a game. Like, we talk about players who can change games. Like, and I only ever played with two that could really swing a game if we really needed it.
Yeah.
One was Laurie Daly. I've never seen anyone make the game go fast and go slow like he did.
Yep,
he could make it go really fast if we were losing, or if we were winning, he'd make the game go really slow and make it easy for everybody.
Yeah, right. Nice.
Yeah. And then when I was at the Dogs, Willie just played some really big games where he just won us the games. He just played. So I remember two games against the Broncos, he just killed them. And he really took it personally to go hard with Gordon Tallis. But Nathan Cleary just has the ability to get the ball and do whatever he wants and makes it look like it's really, really easy.
Yeah.
And today's athletes are, like, probably way more athletic than what we were in my era.
Yep.
So the fact that he's making it look so easy against probably better athletes in a faster game, a much faster game with, you know, fitter and faster players, he makes it look really simple.
Mm.
And that's one thing I'd love to just see, you know, his effect during games, how he could make that happen.
He's such a humble kid too. Like, as I said, he's a good friend of the show. He is. His whole family are. So we've had Ivan on. We've had his mum Beck on. His sister's part of our footy tipping comp. He's just such a humble, nice guy. I know he cops a lot of shit in the media and that because people hate him because he's that fucking good. But honestly, when you get him one-on-one, he's just such a really good kid. But seeing what he did in the grand final last year, we pretty much turned that game on its head and won it for him against the Broncos. That was something special. Like that's the making of, fuck, this kid just wants to win and he knows how to do it.
And that's what I'm talking about. And you remember, like, I think it was down the right edge when he set the first one up down that right edge.
Yep.
He made it look like it was a game of touch footy on a Sunday arvo. He just sort of ran to the line with a bloke on his inside, a bloke on his outside, and he threw a dummy and just sort of ran through a gap. And then the one where he scored, where he just won it, he sort of switched himself back across the ruck, and it looked like he was, like, jogging through the middle of the field there.
Just did a mad step and
Oh,
pretty boy from the Broncos are still crying.
He makes it look really easy, and that's what, like, makes me think to myself, like, these kids that are playing today are way more athletic than us, way fitter. They're, like, professional. They're, like, bodybuilders. These guys are, like, top-line athletes, and Nathan Cleary looks like he's running around just playing touch footy with a lot of them. And Andrew Johns used to do that. If you remember when Andrew Johns was in his prime, he looked like he had the ball on a string, and that's what Cleary does. He just runs around and just looks like he does whatever he wants when
he wants. Good directors,
I was hoping you'd mention him. I'm a Newcastle fan from way back. I thought I might get you with who's the best you played against, but
I only don't mention Joey because I feel like that's a given. Like, if you don't know that Joey was the best player ever in that generation, like, I feel like you're not worthy of the game if you don't just acknowledge him as the best player that ever played in that generation. He just
100%.
You know what? One thing about Joey that doesn't get talked about, he was a nightmare to run at. I remember when I was at the Tigers, Sheensy used to always say, "Let's target Joey. Let's, like, we want to get him tired." And I used to think, like, he doesn't get tired.
Yeah.
And he, like, it hurts when he tackles you.
He could hit hard.
Yeah, he used to bash you, pick you up and flog you in the ground, elbow you in the head, and then he'd chirp you. What has Sheensy made me do this for?
And hasn't Sheensy seen him after the game too? He knows how to play hard then too. Like, he doesn't stop. Like, he's just a bloody machine.
And then, like, it was like we'd lose. We got pumped by 20. And I used to think to myself that, like, that game plan isn't working, Sheensy. We've got to come up with something new. Like, we can't make Joey tired. He doesn't get tired. He just keeps killing us.
Oh, awesome. Mate, I know your time's precious, so we'll wrap it up for today. And I'll tell you what, big hats off to Jeb and Ingrid from Hippo Constructions for hooking this up, because I caught up with them on the weekend, a few brewskis with them, and I'll tell you what, and they said, oh, would you like to talk to Jamal? I went, fucking would or what? Like, being a Bulldogs fan, mate, rock solid. 2004 was the last time that we even looked like winning a comp, even those grand finals that we lost recently. Oh, shit. But, mate, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I'll tell you what, I hope you say impacted in the game too, because, mate, I used to love watching you play, going through the centres, going down the wing. You're always one of those guys that, you know, the opposition had to watch. It was like, fuck, you got to stop this prick because otherwise he's going to run over you.
Yep.
And you were it. So, mate, what a great career. Hats off to you. Thanks for coming on the Armchair Champions. Jamal Lailesi.
Thank you, Jamal.
Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. It's been fun.
So something in the, I guess, sporting entertainment world that happened recently was WrestleMania.
Oh, yes.
Did you catch any of that, Captain?
I did.
I watched the Royal Rumble. Because
it now goes over 2 days, WrestleMania.
It does. It does indeed. And I watched the Royal Rumble probably 2 months ago, whenever that took place. I can't quite remember when it was, but I had it on Fox and was watching that with a few beers on a Sunday arvo. And it brought back some good memories, you know, like back in the late 80s, early 90s, even into the 2000s, yes. I would still watch wrestling. Oh, it was the golden era of wrestling. But,
100%.
You know, years like I think it was 96 when Bret Hart and Lex Luger went over together in the Royal Rumble.
Yep.
They were both my two favourite wrestlers. And watching the Royal Rumble, I don't want to spoil it, so if you haven't seen it and you're planning to watch it, maybe just skip ahead.
Royal Rumble
now.
Or WrestleMania?
The Royal Rumble.
Mm.
So Cody Rhodes made it quite deep into the Royal Rumble, and CM Punk made like a 10-year comeback.
That's right, yeah.
And so we weren't sure what the plan was, whether CM Punk was supposed to win or
where's the backstory?
Cody Rhodes. But the winner was to take on Roman Reigns. And you could just kind of tell that Roman Reigns was about to... His reign was going to end.
He was about to lose it, yep.
And Cody Rhodes, who, if you don't know and you've been living under a rock, he's Dusty Rhodes' son.
Son, yep.
And
Gold Duster's brother.
Dustin Rhodes or Gold Dust's brother, that's right. And so I think the story that they built around that family connection was the perfect way to end the reign of Roman Reigns, given the bloodline, you know, that whole theme around wrestling. And the way that they did it at WrestleMania, bringing back some of the old associated wrestlers who had run-ins with either Cody or Roman along the way.
Yep.
And it was fantastic seeing The Rock come in,
yep,
clear out the ring, and then the lights went out and you heard the bong.
Yes, and The Undertaker.
And then the lights come on and Undertaker's just in the ring standing behind The Rock.
Choke slams him. Yes.
Brilliant scripting. What I know it's fake.
Even John Cena.
We all know it's fake. Yeah, John Cena was there and he was rocking the bald spot. Did you see that?
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, he's got the comb over at the back going.
They asked him about it and he said, I don't care. Like, I know I'm going bald. I'm not going to try and hide it or do anything like that. So good on him. But, I thought it was a brilliant way to end the story and move forward. And so Cody Rhodes, well done on becoming the world champ of the WWE.
Yeah, nice one. Now The Rock's been going on his little rant now saying he actually got a belt too from Muhammad Ali's daughter.
Right.
So he's been rocking that, going, I'm the best of all time and all this sort of shit, whatever. I'm the boss man. And, yeah. Okay, well, let's see where that
the
goes.
The final boss.
That's the final boss.
The final boss is new moniker, but geez, very entertaining. We all know it's fake and it's scripted, but there is still something to be said for the athleticism and the craft of wrestling.
Yep.
And I really enjoyed it, even though it's...
Well, the crowd speak for themselves.
Honestly, like one of the highest watched events ever.
Yeah.
Crazy stuff. And how good have they done to move past, you know, like UFC just paid, or the owners of UFC, I suppose, just paid all this money to acquire WWE.
Yep.
And it must have been awful with all that Vince McMahon stuff coming out. And, you know,
it's still more to come, I think.
What a stain.
It's ugly. Yeah.
What a stain on the brand. But they've managed it as good as you could.
Yep.
You know, Vince is now completely out of the brand. Yep. His shares have been, you know, sold or whatever. And then such a good storyline to kind of lift the brand again. I think they've done a really good job.
Yep. No, 100%. I agree. All right, champions, time to wrap it up for another week. Once again, a massive shout-out to Jamal Lolesi for coming on and having a chat. It was a good chat.
Mate, he could talk.
Well, yes, like, good bloke.
Great bloke and some fantastic stories.
Great stories.
Almost the perfect person to interview because you barely had to prompt him with anything.
No. the way he talks too, and Jesus Christ, his kids, like they're A-grade scholars.
mate, he's got some good bloodlines.
Good
there,
genes so. There happening, that's for sure. But Jamal, hey, thanks for coming on, mate. You're welcome anytime. You're now part of the family. But Sheriff, where can people find us? And let's wrap it up.
I've been gone for a little bit, but I hope you all haven't forgotten that we're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. You just look for Armchair Champions all over socials. You can find us on our website, www.armchairchampions.com.au. And then anywhere that good, bad and average podcasts can be found, we're on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah, we'll be around this, aren't we?
iTunes, we're on Spotify. So make sure you look for us. Make sure you share our episodes. Tell your friends, tell your mum. And as always, keep your balls between the lines. Thank you, champions.